Welcome to Plymouth Beneath the Surface podcast. Take a deep breath and dive with me into Plymouth waters to meet people such as scientists, students, photographers, divers, and artists that have orientated their lives around the ocean. I'm your host, Louisa Sien, a recent marine biology graduate from the University of Plymouth, and I'm really happy to have you here to listen to some of my conversations with inspiring and passionate people talking about the ocean. So let's get started. Welcome, Debbie. I'm really happy to be here with you in your lovely garden.
Thank you.
Can I ask you to introduce yourself, please?
Yes, I'm Debbie Mason. I'm a printmaker, Plymouth born, Plymouth based, and I now have a workshop in Areston, just outside Plymouth. And my passion is all things marine. From very early age, living literally 5 minutes away from where I am now, family day trips would be to Wembley Beach. And I just remember turning rocks over, rock pooling, and always looking for elusive cowries and being very excited if I found a cowry. Family holidays tended to be in North Cornwall. And I remember crabbing with my father, rock pooling again, and surfing, and just enjoying the sea. I then went to Plymouth College for A-level and that's when I first started etching. I was very, very fortunate, having a great teacher. So that's when my real passion for printmaking began. Then I went and did a degree in printmaking in Farnham in Surrey, but just too far from the sea. And I used to come home if I could most weekends because Surrey is lovely, but it's not the sea.
Not quite as Plymouth.
Then when I finished my degree, I moved back here and had a very, very small workshop and continued doing my work.
Great. So how long have you been doing this for?
Really, since I left school. So over 40 years now.
Nice. And so you're an artist. Is drawing the right word for
yes.
what you...
Yeah? Yes. I start off with an idea, and a lot of my fish either come from the fish market, specimen, and Moby Nick, one of the fish merchants, if he sees something unusual that's landed, he quite often buys it for me. And we have quite a good arrangement with homemade marmalade swapped for interesting species. So last year I had a beautiful scorpion fish, the colours are just beautiful. And of course I think of rascasse, the bouillabaisse, the French soup.
Yeah.
Which people probably wouldn't realise that things quite as exotic as that are in our waters.
Yeah.
So that was an etching that I worked on last year. But a lot of the drawings, if they're not from specimens from the fish market, a lot of drawings are from aquariums. And as the creatures move around, my sketchbook will be a mixture of a tail of one, a head of another, a fin of another. And then when I get to the stage of putting it onto the copper plate to make the etching, it might be the combination of half a dozen different creatures just to get each bit as they move around, rather than waiting. One disastrous one was trying to draw an octopus in the aquarium, and it just decided it was going to hide under a rock. So in the end, I think I got a couple of suckers and half a tentacle, and that was about it. So I gave up and drew something else. One of the creatures that I was really passionate about drawing was the Argonaut, having read Jules Verne and thinking about the Nautilus and things like Jason the Argonaut. It's just such wonderful names that just conjure up such extraordinary creatures. I went to the Natural History Museum in London, and I knew the then curator of the mollusk department, and she just showed me this cabinet, or two or three cabinets, just full of beautiful Argonaut shells, all nestled on scruffy bits of cotton wool with beautiful handwritten copper plate labels saying where they'd come from. So I had a wonderful morning in the mollusk library just drawing these shells, with beautiful books all around me, and peace and quiet away from the chaos of the Natural History Museum, which was wonderful. So that was a real treat. But drawing the actual body of the Argonaut was slightly more challenging, because they just had one little body in a little glass flask. And so drawing that was a bit of a challenge. And then when I came home, trying to fit the body that I'd drawn into the Argonaut was a bit of a challenge. But it's one of my favourite creatures, And a few years ago, a journal in America emailed me to say, could they use it on the front cover of their magazine?
Wow.
Called Molecular Cell. And they sent me a copy of the magazine, but it was completely over my head. But I was very flattered that they thought it was good enough to be on the front cover of their magazine, seeing as I'd more or less invented where I thought the tentacles could be from more of an artistic point of view than possibly a scientific or technical way.
So you mentioned the aragonite. Are there any other species that you really like drawing?
The nautilus as well. I think when I was very small, we had a nautilus shell in our china cabinet, which my parents had been given by one of the directors from the marine lab. And I always thought it was the most beautiful, beautiful thing. And then I was lucky enough to see live nautilus in the Museum of Oceanography in Monaco many years ago. Wow. So I did some drawings of it there.
Wow.
So I've been very lucky to go to some beautiful aquariums and be able to do some drawings.
So is there a specific reason why you only draw marine life?
I think...
And it's animals as well. Do you?
A few animals, yes. I did have a year off a few years ago when I was asked to illustrate a cookery book on game. And that took me about a year to do the illustrations. So things like hares and rabbits and birds... I did enjoy it because feathers are so very like scales, but I really missed drawing fish. So the first print I did after I finished doing the book was an armadillo because they're scaly and hairy, and it seemed...
Close enough.
And when I was small, we had a jelly mould, a china jelly mould in the shape of an armadillo, which now seems to me quite strange. Sort of rabbit is more traditional. So I was rather fond of this armadillo idea, and the jelly mould was beautifully decorated, very detailed, with little claws and tail and scales. And if the jelly worked, it was a beautiful, beautiful jelly. So again, I went to the Natural History Museum, and very kindly the mollusk lady managed to borrow an armadillo for me from the mammal department. So again, I was sitting in the mollusk library drawing this wonderful armadillo, and a chap came in, wandered into the library, and he just looked at the armadillo, and he said, "You never know what you're going to find in this place," he said. "Someone in the mollusk library drawing an armadillo," and then he just wandered off.
But you don't do any plants or even like, you know, kelp or seagrass? It's the animals
that I'm really drawn to. But having started to draw plankton as well, I find that really, really incredible. I was very lucky to be able to go to what was Saphos at the MBA to look through the microscope and to see what I'd seen as a sort of plankton bloom when I've been diving in the Sound, to actually be able to look at them was incredible. I must admit, I'm more drawn to the zooplankton than the phytoplankton, because I do love the zooplankton, the crabs and things like that, the expressions on the faces, even though you can just see them.
So you mentioned diving as well.
Yes.
Do you dive a lot?
I haven't dived for a couple of years. But I did learn to dive back in the 80s, and Plymouth Sound's just the most wonderful place to learn. I mean, sometimes the visibility, you wouldn't see your hand in front of your face, and tide sometimes you felt as if you were diving in a washing machine. But the amazing amount of life, and I remember my first ever dive, open water dive, seeing a large blue starfish, and I was terribly excited, just the colour of it, just thinking, and cuckoo wrasse. Something that was so beautifully orange and turquoise that looked like something that should be in the Mediterranean or in an aquarium. I was so surprised. And just being able to sit on the seabed and watch a cuttlefish sort of waving at you and then looking as if it's been pulled by a piece of elastic and just disappear. And shoals of sand eels and spider crabs just walking along the seabed like an alien landing craft. It's really exciting, and I've been terribly lucky to be able to dive in other places around the world, which is wonderful. So in the Red Sea, in the Maldives, in the Caribbean, you feel like you're diving in a fish tank, but in Plymouth Sound, in British waters, you never quite know what you're going to see. It's a bit more of an element of surprise, I think. But it is colder, and I always dive in a dry suit.
Because you haven't dived in a couple of years, you said, but did you used to get your inspiration from underwater? But obviously you can't draw in the water, could you?
I did have a go at drawing underwater, but the result in, that was in the Plymouth Aquarium actually. I was allowed to dive in one of the tanks, and I did some drawing, but they really weren't very good. And also, I did have a pencil on a piece of string to stop it bobbing away, but the results weren't really very good.
Not as good.
No. And my my attempts at underwater photography aren't really very good either. I managed, before digital cameras came along, I managed to take a whole roll of film with a piece of seaweed stuck on the lens, so that's not really my thing either.
More than fish, you also draw bigger species like whales, and have you seen them?
Yes, I went on a trip to the Azores a few years ago and went whale watching. So the whales I've done have been from models and reading.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, it's the chickens.
And what have been your last pieces then? Your last species that you've been drawing?
The tuna. The tuna was the last major etching that I did, which was in my head since last October, having seen them in Bigbury Bay.
Can you tell us about this,
yes.
How it came to you, yes. As like an inspiration?
Well, last year, which was so odd for everyone, but we were really fortunate to be able to get out in our boat, and a couple of trips out were really just beautiful flat weather, flat seas, and we were lucky enough to see a dolphin and a calf near the Eddiston, which was absolutely beautiful, and then a pod of porpoises around Bigbury Bay. Then in October, one of our last boat trips of the year, we were heading across Bigbury Bay to Hope Cove and just to meet some friends, and it was absolutely flat calm. You could barely see where the sky started and the sea began. It was so blue, and I was just sitting looking out thinking, it's so flat calm, there must be a sunfish or something, so I love watching sunfish, and there must be something around, and I haven't seen a sunfish for a couple of years. And then I just heard an incredible splashing, and two tuna just leapt out of the water in a complete perfect arc in front of us. So I was just absolutely, was so excited, just gibbering, because I knew, I had heard that tuna were around, but I thought they'd be much further out. So seeing them in Bigbury Bay was really exciting. And then we just heard a sort of pfft sound and turned round, and a minke whale just sank beneath the surface. So it was one of the best trips ever. So I had to message my friends and say, I'm really sorry, we're going to be late. We've just got rather waylaid by watching tuna and a minke whale. So hopefully this year may see a humpback or something.
There's been one in Cornwall. There's been a humpback whale observed in Cornwall.
Yes.
So maybe.
Maybe. sunfish, I think, are really, really, really magical. So I'm hoping to perhaps see the sweets. Well, last time I was out a couple of weeks ago, saw lots of jellyfish. I was thinking, oh, maybe there might be a sunfish, but not so far.
And do you find there are some pieces or like some species that people like more, that you sell more, species that are more charismatic than others?
Yes.
And
yes.
Some that don't really get.
People don't get so excited about cod and pollock, unfortunately. But I just get really wrapped up in I don't know, trying to get the character of the fish and the detail and the scales. And I love drawing scales and just pattern and texture, really. Mm. So the scorpion fish was great because it's so colourful and just, it does look grumpy, I must admit. But then so does my John Dory. And I don't think you'd ever find a John Dory that actually looked cheerful.
Do you have a monkfish?
I have. He looks fairly grumpy too. I've done a chirpy looking sunfish, but I think generally fish perhaps have a slightly gloomy expression.
And it's interesting to show a different angle. What I mean is, you know, people that eat fish, you don't get the whole fish. It's not as, you know, fresh and colourful as you would see underwater. And I'm pretty sure, you know, people would look at one of your drawing of a cod and don't realise it is one.
No, and also the scale of a cod, because if you only ever buy a piece of white filleted fish in a polystyrene container, you're not really going to appreciate
how
big they actually are. And also, if you buy tuna in tins, how an enormous, magnificent creature like a tuna ends up in a tiny tin, which I struggle with now.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you eat fish then, or how do you find it? If you relate so much to like this species,
there's some fish I can't eat, I must admit, and I do like fishing, and if I'm lucky enough to catch a mackerel or if I'm diving and I pick up a scallop, I will eat it. There are certain things like a cuttlefish and octopus I'm not so keen on eating, which doesn't really make any sense because I eat other things, but it's very difficult for I wish people did eat more fish, because the fishing industry could do with it, people eating more fish. And also England, Britain as an island nation, we eat less fish than any other country in Europe, which seems crazy. And all this wonderful shellfish that before Brexit was going abroad, we should be eating it.
That's the thing. I think people in England eat fish, but you know, it's not necessarily fish that has been caught in England.
No.
Especially in the southwest, we don't necessarily eat fish that has been caught locally, and you know, it's mainly salmon or tuna or cod, and not necessarily caught here. And like, there are so many species that could be eaten. And as you said, we export a lot of our fish and we import a lot of our fish, shellfish. I've got a friend who's a fisherman, a crab fisherman, but then they were getting dog whelks, huge bags of dog whelks, all sent to Asia. I think it's not necessarily like eating more fish, it's eating fish
the
like
right fish.
in a better way. Mm. I've actually, like, the episode just before this one is actually about how you can eat sustainable fish in Plymouth with sort of discretion. So I touched on that on the previous episode. It must be, I don't know, I find it difficult as well when you study something and you can relate to them a bit more, like, can I actually eat that species? Octopus are so incredible. Yes. And there's been like this documentary, My Octopus Teacher.
Yes.
And now everyone is like, oh my god, I don't know if I can eat it, because they are living organisms. And you can see, as you mentioned, like their expressions and
characters. Well, one of the nicest projects I've had was a commission from Plymouth Trawler Agents, and that was to produce a poster, Plymouth and its Fish, to promote 50 of the species that are landed in Plymouth. And that's been a really wonderful thing to be able to, apart from the moment, sadly, I can't go to shows, but to show this poster. And it's such a great talking point, because people come and look at it and they either say, oh, eaten that one, caught that one, died with that one. And I think what's lovely is the fact that there's such a different range of creatures on this poster. Things like a ballon wrasse, which is red with blue spots, the cuckoo wrasse, the orange and turquoise fish, and really quite exotic looking fish. And people have no idea that these fish are literally on their doorstep. And things like pollock, which is related to the cod, and it's great eating, but people, I think their perception of fish is possibly, some fish is just in batter with chips. And also the idea of just getting a nondescript piece of fish from the supermarket wrapped in polystyrene and plastic, when you can go to the fish market and you can see the fish that's been landed, and it might not be the fish you had your eye on, but just looking at something and thinking, well, I can cook that.
Yeah, definitely.
And just trying something
different.
I've seen
that poster. It's such a beautiful one. I've seen it to like many different places in Plymouth. I think it's great. I think it's a nice way, because obviously there is like photography and videos that you can, you know, show people what's in British waters. But I think art and drawings is another way to actually show people what's in the water.
Well, I hope so, because with the first lockdown, I've done another 44 drawings of Plymouth fish to go on a second poster. So I'm hoping there'll be more Plymouth fish. I'm not sure what it's going to be called yet, but a partner to that one.
So where can we find your art?
Hopefully I'll be at the Seafood and Harbour Festival in Sutton Harbour on the 18th and 19th of September.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that the new poster will be ready for that. So I'm really excited about that, because what's been really hard with the lockdowns, I'm working by myself in my workshop, which I'm very, very lucky to have it at home, but not going to markets every month and exhibiting has been really hard, because not being able to talk to people. And I had 3 exhibitions lined up for Spain last year, so those didn't happen. So I've got lots of new work, which I'm really excited about showing to people, and just really getting out and talking to people again.
Yeah, I remember seeing you quite a lot in the Royal William Yard Market. And do you have some of your pieces in like shops in the Barbican? Or
yes, 45 Southside has some of my prints, and also Green Space in Mutley Plain. Okay. And I also have a website, and people are always very welcome to come here to the workshop if they don't mind the mess and the chickens.
No, it is a really lovely place. I would recommend.
I can't say that my workshop's always tidy, because it really isn't, but I do kind of know where everything is. It's work in progress.
So obviously you spend your time thinking about fish and the marine world, and how do you feel about then marine conservation, or how do you think marine conservation inspires you, or does it inspire you to?
It does, very much so. I think some of the first creatures I did were seahorses, and I really enjoyed drawing seahorses. And then I was very lucky to be offered an exhibition at London Zoo, in the aquarium at London Zoo, and they put it up, and I think they actually must have forgotten about it, because it was there for about 7 years, and it raised money for Project Seahorse, which was lovely. And 1 year it raised £2,500, and apparently that was enough to buy a boat and an engine and pay someone to man it for a year in the Philippines, in the marine reserve. So I was really, really happy to be able to do that. And also I try and support the lobster hatchery in Padstow. But I think with the poster, I'm hoping that people are perhaps realising what we have. It's just really trying to raise awareness of what is in our waters, and how important it is to protect our oceans. And also the plastics, to really try, because when I go out in the boat, finding the amount of plastic that I do. And also you might have noticed the pile of boys
in
the trees, and they just wash around. Just picking up, I could fill a dustbin every day with the things that wash up just on the foreshore in front of the house. And I'm sure it is better, it's much better than it was. And I think with the lockdowns, people have been out more, and I think appreciating what Plymouth around here, we are so fortunate in Plymouth to have the moors and the sea on our doorsteps, whereas it's been so hard for everyone. But here at least we can escape to the seaside, and I think just being by any sort of water, whether it's a river, a stream, a garden pond or the sea, just the feeling of it just lifts your spirits. Really lifts the spirits. And some days when it's really, really wet, I'll just go and sit on the beach at Mountbatten, and I don't know, it just gives you energy.
That's what I really love. I completely agree.
I have a paddle board, but I'm fairly tentative. I don't venture terribly far on it.
No, it is definitely, and hopefully, as you said, it is a great way to raise awareness and telling people what's in our waters, really. And alongside photography, it's another way to engage people.
Yes.
And I think we do need multiple ways of engaging people, because they respond differently, whether it's a drawing, a photography, a video, a music.
I just love drawing fish and crabs and things like that. I love the detail of the little hairy joints and things like that, and the patterns and the shells.
How long does it take you to make? Depends on the piece, I guess.
Yes,
but
the tuna took me about, it's quite a large tuna, the plate itself is 16 inches, and drawing all the detail onto the copper plate as it's etching took me about a week, and then it took me a day to etch it, because when I actually etch the plate, the copper plate, it goes into nitric acid, and by taking it in and out of the acid and painting out some of the lines, I can stop some of the lines etching, so I get different tones and different depths of line. So that took me today to do. Then I print them, and my press is actually an old mangle which has been converted onto paper that I've soaked in the bath for a couple of days. Then I've laid it down under a mat for a couple of days, so it's not bone dry and not sopping wet. The plate I heat on a hot plate, and then I rub very, very stiff ink into all the lines, and then gradually wipe it away, so the ink is just left in the lines on the plate. So the plate is warm when I print it, and the ink is soft. So I put that on the bed of the press. The paper, which is not bone dry and not sopping wet, goes over the plate. Then I have woolen blankets, which then go over the paper. Then I roll it through my press. It's just like a clothes mangle. The roller, the bed goes through the press. And then the warm, soft ink and the pressure of the press, the paper gets really forced into the plate and lifts out the image. Then I dry them under sheets of tissue paper and blotting paper and a pile of diving weights for several days, and then I hand colour each one. The tuna takes me 3 hours to hand colour one.
Wow, so each piece you hand coloured?
Hand printed and hand coloured. But the tuna, I actually cut the plate out rather than etching it onto a rectangular piece of copper, and that took me about 6 hours to file. I cut it out roughly with a jigsaw, and then I filed and burnished. So that was hard work. I need to find a better way of cutting the plates. But I just wanted it to have, somehow the cutout plates, they're really sort of embedded. They're very much embedded into the paper, and that's what I really like.
You are actually the first, let's say, artist that I have on the podcast, because most people I've had, you know, have a scientific background, and it's, no, but that's great, because I think it's showing that you can be by the sea all the time, you can do something related to marine life, and you can do your bit for marine conservation, and it doesn't have to be science, and it can be like your art, and I think it's beautiful.
Thank you. Well, I wouldn't say I'm technically that accurate, but I just try and draw what I see, and if a fish has got a damaged fin or something, I'll tend to draw that, and that's what I just really, really enjoy, getting just wrapped into it. And a lot of people say, do you, if you've got a fish from the fish market, do you eat it after you've drawn it? And I'm like, no, because it's just too familiar. Apart from the fact I've spent hours and hours drawing it, it probably is far from fresh, and I can put things in and out of the deep freeze while I'm working on it. But I think by the time I've stared at it for days on end, I feel I know it too well, so they get buried.
Do you have a graveyard? Or
well, where I used to live, there were some quite unusual, back in Plimstock, there must have been quite a strange collection, because I did an etching of a pike, so that was buried, and then a large carp. So that, as well as the anglerfish, quite a big anglerfish, and various other sea fish. I think if anyone ever dug up the garden, they'd think some quite strange things happened. But I do love going to the fish market and just seeing what's come in. Mm. I miss going to the fish market. I used to go every week to catch up with the trawler agents and have a cup of tea. So I'm looking forward to being able to do that again. And also finding out, it was a good way of finding out what was around, because I'd hear about the tuna and various other things that had been seen.
It's a nice insight into
what's
going on. And do you have any, I don't really know about the art industry, but it is an industry that is maybe hard to get a name in, or I don't know.
I think I was very lucky with London Zoo, with the exhibition promoting my work for Project Seahorse. I think, I just feel that if my pictures can just raise any sort of awareness of what we need to protect, I think that's really what I want to do.
And do you have any tips or advice for maybe listeners that, you know, they do art and they want to do that for marine conservation or conservation in general? Or
persevere.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Persevere. And I think once things get more back to normal, just talking to people, using what you do to engage, and also the creativity, being by the water, just so much creativity. Mm. And I think just try and enjoy what you do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's just been lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for listening to Debbie and I, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. And yeah, I think art has its place in marine conservation, and at least to like raise awareness about the local marine life. I think Debbie is doing a really great work, and I would highly recommend checking out her work, and I've put more information in the description. She's really, really talented, and her work is really beautiful. Anyway, I'll speak to you soon for the next episode, and thanks again for being part of this journey with me.